This is the parallax for Wednesday, February 4th, 2026. Multiple angles, one picture. Here's what you need to know today. We begin with Washington, where President Trump signed legislation ending a four-day partial government shutdown. The spending package funds most federal agencies through September, but here's where it gets complicated. The Department of Homeland Security received only a two-week extension, setting up another funding fight by mid-February. The House passed the measure in a narrow 217-214 vote, with more than 20 Democrats crossing party lines to support it. How this is being covered reflects the different political narratives at play. Fox News led with Trump declaring a great victory with the spending package, reporting that he signed the bills in an Oval Office ceremony surrounded by Republican lawmakers. Axios, meanwhile, focused on the looming negotiations, noting that Congress will have just 10 days to work out DHS reforms, and that the two sides are currently far apart on what restrictions, if any, should be placed on ICE and Customs and Border Protection operations. That tight timeline underscores a deeper divide among Democrats themselves about whether to use these negotiations as leverage to restrict immigration enforcement. Turning to another major story dominating Capitol Hill, the newly released Epstein files are triggering a remarkable political scramble. The Justice Department released over 3 million documents related to Jeffrey Epstein's criminal activities this week, prompting congressional Democrats to call for depositions from Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, scheduled for late February. The framing of this story differs sharply depending on the outlet. The Guardian focused on revelations that prominent figures like linguist Noam Chomsky had a long-standing relationship with Epstein. The BBC highlighted an agreement between the House Oversight Committee and the Clintons to sit for depositions. But Axios captured perhaps the most significant political angle. President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance are signaling different positions. Trump suggested it's time for the country to get onto something else, while Vance signaled openness to further testimony on allegations in the files. That divergence between the president and vice president is noteworthy. In related news on elections and voting rights, President Trump has called on Republican state officials to take over and nationalize elections in 15 states ahead of the midterms. In a recent podcast interview, Trump claimed immigrants were brought to the U.S. to vote illegally and suggested that federal control is necessary to prevent non-citizen voting. The Guardian framed this as part of Trump's broader push for election integrity measures. But the response from within his own party has been lukewarm at best. Senate Majority Leader John Thune publicly disagreed, noting that the Constitution grants states authority over elections. Multiple Republicans on Capitol Hill have shown little appetite for embracing Trump's push for federal election control, a sign that even within the party, there's resistance to this particular proposal. Meanwhile, a story that caught our attention involves Democratic senators claiming credit for federal funding they actually opposed. Senators, including Martin Heinrich of New Mexico, are touting tens of millions of dollars in federal funding they secured for local projects in their home states, despite voting against the legislation that provided those funds. The Washington Examiner ran with this, highlighting what appears to be a contradiction in how these legislators present their records to constituents while opposing party leadership initiatives. It's the kind of political theater that occurs across both parties, but it underscores the tension between opposing something in principle and benefiting from it in practice. On the subject of immigration enforcement itself, congressional Democrats held a hearing this week featuring testimony from people who experienced violent encounters with federal agents. Luke and Brent Ganger, Mayimer, brothers of Renee Good, a 37-year-old killed in an immigration enforcement encounter, shared their stories alongside three other U.S. citizens shot and detained by federal agents. Notably, no Republicans attended the hearing. The Guardian reported that Democrats offered apologies and promises of accountability, focusing on what they characterized as violent tactics and disproportionate use of force by the Department of Homeland Security. NPR added important context. Calls to abolish ICE have led to divisions among Democrats themselves, with some concerned about appearing out of step with voters who want immigration laws enforced. This reflects a genuine fracture within the Democratic coalition on how aggressive to be in opposing immigration enforcement. Related to that tension, Vice President J.D. Vance has refused to apologize to the family of Alex Preti, an ICU nurse and anti-ICE protester who was killed in Minneapolis in an incident related to federal immigration enforcement operations. Vance endorsed an initial characterization by White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller that Preti was an assassin. The New York Post covered the vice president's refusal to apologize, while notably this story received less mainstream coverage than the Democratic hearing on immigration enforcement violence. A framing difference that itself tells us something about how different outlets prioritize these stories. Shifting our focus to the world, the nominal ceasefire between Israel and Hamas continues to fracture. Israeli military strikes killed at least 17 to 21 Palestinians in Gaza on Tuesday, including multiple children, following what Israel said was a gun attack on its troops. NPR reported the death toll is 19, mostly women and children. The BBC noted that 6 children were among those killed. This marks one of the deadliest days since the ceasefire agreement took effect on October 10, 2025. Israel suspended evacuations of Palestinians through the Rafah crossing in response to what it characterized as Hamas violations of the deal. The ceasefire, nominally in place for 4 months, continues to exist in name only. In the Middle East more broadly, military and diplomatic tracks are running parallel. The United States shot down an Iranian drone that aggressively approached the USS Abraham Lincoln in the Arabian Sea on Tuesday, a significant military escalation. Yet simultaneously, Iran's president indicated willingness to pursue fair and equitable negotiations with the U.S., with talks scheduled in Oman this Friday. How different outlets frame this reflects their different emphases. The Daily Wire led with the U.S. shooting down the drone. Al Jazeera instead asked, can U.S.-Iran diplomacy work inside the narrow window for talks? Axios reported that Iran is demanding changes to the venue and format for negotiations. The juxtaposition of military escalation and diplomatic engagement suggests both sides are trying to talk while maintaining leverage, a tragic development in the Mediterranean. A collision between a migrant speedboat and a Greek Coast Guard vessel near the island of Chios killed at least 15 people on Tuesday. The Coast Guard said a pursuit was underway at the time of the collision. One of the injured women later died in hospital, bringing the death toll higher. The BBC reported the basic facts of the collision. The New York Post updated the death toll. This incident adds to the ongoing Mediterranean migration crisis and raises questions about Coast Guard procedures during enforcement operations. In Europe, Russia and Ukraine began the second round of peace talks in Abu Dhabi on Tuesday, focusing on ending the war. The main sticking point remains the long-term fate of territory in eastern Ukraine. Al Jazeera reported on the talks themselves, but Zero Hedge highlighted a significant detail. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said that post-peace security arrangements would include NATO military deployments across Ukraine, on land, at sea, and in the air. That's a critical component of any potential agreement, and it suggests that ending the shooting war is only the first step in a much longer process of reconfiguring security in Eastern Europe. In Libya, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, the most prominent son of Libya's late longtime ruler, was reportedly assassinated on Tuesday. The 53-year-old was once widely seen as the second most powerful person in Libya. The BBC confirmed his death at the hands of unidentified gunmen. Zero Hedge reported that 4 men reportedly entered and shot him. His assassination marks a significant development in Libya's ongoing political instability. Looking at markets, gold rebounded sharply, reclaiming the $5,000 level after suffering through its worst performance in 46 years just days earlier. MarketWatch reported on investors questioning whether gold still belongs in retirement portfolios after its dramatic fall. Bloomberg noted that dip buyers snapped up precious metals following the historic collapse. Zero Hedge took a different angle, reporting that the German Bundesbank, holder of the second largest gold reserves among central banks, appeared to be signaling a lack of confidence in global monetary stability. That's a significant statement from a major central bank about the state of global finances. Spain's largest lender, Banco Santander, John Santander announced a $12 billion acquisition of the U.S. bank Webster Financial on Tuesday. CEO Anna Botin said the deal will drive profitability among top U.S. banks. Bloomberg reported her remarks and Santander's beating of earnings estimates. But MarketWatch noted that Santander shares fell in the wake of the announcement as investors questioned the valuation metrics. It's a reminder that even major banks' strategic moves can face skepticism in the market. Finally, stocks bounced back this week after recent anxiety about artificial intelligence valuations. Gold reclaimed that $5,000 mark. The software sell-off boosted the appeal of value stocks, with asset managers like M&G reporting that clients are reallocating capital to Europe and Asia. Axios added an important detail: everyday investors trading through platforms